welcome to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us. My name is Elaine Summerfield, the host for Inspire Indeed, where we're learning about community issues and the nonprofits and engaged citizens that are working to address them. Hopefully, you'll be inspired to think about how you're making a difference with your deeds. You know, with the warm weather we have and the tulips and the daffodils and that thin sheen of pollen coating every surface these days, we know that spring is here. And another signal of spring is those birds that greet you. I love to hear the birds chirping when I leave the house in the morning. Today we're going to hear about the many reasons why we rely on our native bird species and reasons that are far deeper than just nice accompaniment to a springtime walk. Mary Elfner is the director of Virginia Audubon Council, and she'll share more about the role of birds in our ecosystem, but more about how Audubon is engaging and educating youth about this issue and encouraging them to be the future stewards of bird habitat in our community. Welcome, Mary.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. Now, I think most of our listeners have probably heard of the Audubon Society. I mean, they have great calendars and they have great name recognition, all of that.
Yeah.
But many people probably don't know much about what they do aside from they like birds, right?
Right.
So can you tell us a little bit about the history, but maybe more about the mission and history of the Virginia Audubon Council? How does that work?
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, Audubon has great recognition, and National Audubon's been around 100 years. The Virginia Audubon Council is a separate 501c3. We work with National Audubon. We work with the local chapters, and there are 6 local chapters in Virginia, 1 in Richmond. And we organize the principles of all 6 of those local chapters. Plus, we have some of our own programs that we're going to talk about today. So we represent Audubon statewide in Virginia.
And you said there are 6 councils around, including 1 in Richmond.
6 local chapters. Yep, 1 council and 6 local chapters. So Audubon's a little confusing in that it's decentralized.
Okay.
But we have 6 chapters in Virginia, including the Richmond Audubon Society, located here in Richmond.
So when you look at the Virginia Audubon Council's role, mm-hmm. you're helping to support each of those different chapters?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We're bringing them together. We meet 3 times a year. We have a separate board that's made up of local chapter representatives, and we talk about conservation issues and programming at the local chapter level, but also at the council level and what we can do statewide, particularly with our programs that we're going to talk about, but also how we integrate into National Audubon.
Okay.
So we're the middle player.
And the real focus is on conservation as it relates to birds and bird habitat, correct?
That is correct. That's the main point, is conservation, why it's important, how birds fit into all the many different environmental nonprofits that exist, both at the national level and locally.
I think some of us kind of intuitively know we like birds, we want to have them around, we think they're important, but why are birds really important?
Oh, birds are so important for so many reasons, and I'll try to make this brief, but you know, the what I say to the kids when I lecture to them for Team Wood Thrush, the students, I end with why birds are important. So it's a great question. They're so important because not only do they provide a look into nature for us, and they're around us everywhere. You can't ignore birds, especially now when it's spring and they're migrating and you hear all those great sounds and they're setting up their nests. But they're pollinators, and they're indicators of the quality of the environment. For instance, you've probably heard of the canary in the coal mine.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we see bird species declining, we know that there's a problem.
It's an indicator of a bigger environmental issue that might be going on around us.
Correct. So if they're losing habitat ground, you know, we need to think about that as humans. And is there something we can do to help them, plus to help ourselves?
So if it's impacting birds first, or maybe earlier, we can anticipate it's going to be impacting the rest of our ecosystem down the road.
Exactly. That's it. That's the main point. They pollinate, too. They're great pollinators. We love them because they sing, they fly, they build nests. They're endlessly fascinating creatures that are with us everywhere in the world.
They are. That's for sure. Now, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM. You can hear previous shows on the Inspire Indeed blog, which is inspireindeed.blogspot.com. Today, we're learning about the importance of birds and what we can do to help support the populations in this time of ever-shrinking natural habitat. Mary Elfner's here from Virginia Audubon Council. And Mary, what's a good website where people can go learn more?
We are building our Virginia Audubon Council website as we speak. So the best thing that people can do right now is they can look for their local chapter. They can look for Richmond Audubon Society, and I cannot remember the exact URL, but Googling certainly helps, or any kind of search engine. Uh-huh. Looking for local Audubon chapters in the area, VirginiaAudubonCouncil.org, verbatim, no spaces, no caps, is being built, and we hope to have that ready in about a month.
Oh, okay, great. So that'll be up a little bit later this spring. But in the meantime, yes, folks can look for information on the Richmond Audubon.
They can, chapter. Yes. Okay. Most local chapters in Virginia have some kind of a council component.
Okay, great. Now, tell us a little bit about the program under Audubon that you call, I think it's important bird areas. What's an important bird area?
Yes. So important bird areas, or IBAs, as we use the acronym, are places not just in Virginia, but around the globe that are important to bird conservation and important to bird habitat. So this is an effort that was started by BirdLife International quite a while ago. I don't have the exact date. And places have been identified all over the world that are important to bird conservation. So we have 20 in Virginia that represent 3.5 million acres of the Commonwealth. And
in what way are they important to birds? Like, they're stopping off grounds during migration?
They're stop off for migration. Uh-huh. They can be breeding sites, okay, like on the eastern shore. A lot of migration happens on the shore. I probably shouldn't use that one as an example. But let's take the Lower James River IBA, because that's our local IBA.
Right. Uh-huh.
Bald eagles mm-hmm. are certainly breeding in that particular IBA, and that's a high, level species that people recognize and care about. They also provide habitat for wintering birds. So when you think birds, you have to think wintering habitat, breeding habitat, migrating habitat, and some even live here year-round are called resident birds. And these important bird areas provide habitats for all those different species, probably over 400 to 500 or even 6 possibly in Virginia.
Now, in terms of your education efforts to let folks know about important bird areas or IBAs, what sorts of activities are taking place right now with Virginia Audubon Council?
Okay, so right now the Great Blue Heron Rookery down on the James River is very active. And
I think I saw one flying through the air on my way here.
You probably did, yeah. So that's a very active rookery, and it's been that way for 7-8 years now, and we always lead guided walks there. That's a great place to go get oriented to the city and to the beauty of the James River here in Richmond, and to go look at an active heron rookery. That's a great thing that people can do right now. And then in the summer, the other thing that comes to mind is when the purple martins come. You've probably heard about that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that happens in late July, early August, when up to 10,000 purple martins can come and roost by the 17th Street Farmers Market. So there's a festival associated with that every year called Gone to the Birds. And I think the date's been set this year, but I'm not sure. But you can certainly, again, search that, Gone to the Birds Festival.
And that's the Purple Martin Festival that takes place down at the 17th Street Market each year.
Yeah, it's a great festival.
So that's a way that folks can get involved. What about different types of outreach efforts that you're doing? I mentioned at the beginning that you're doing some work with youth, with some of our younger residents around here. What are you doing with youth?
I am so interested in youth today. I have an 11-year-old son, and I just feel very strongly about the fact that kids today are spending a lot more time online and less time outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started a program called Team Wood Thrush. And the wood thrush is a species that's rapidly declining. It breeds in the eastern U.S. and winters in Central America. So I go out and take Team Wood Thrush into the middle schools. We've worked with 3 or 4 this year to date.
Mm-hmm.
We want to expand the program. I give a lecture to middle school students sometime in the winter, take them on a field trip in the spring, hook them up on a private social network so they can keep engaging with one another. And eventually, I'd love to take this into a Central American country and make it an international program.
And take the middle schoolers down there with you?
Wow, wouldn't that be fun? And the teachers, I'm sure, and the families, because it's not just the students we reach on this. We really work with the teachers also and the family members.
Tell us a little bit how that works. So you go into a middle school with an educational program. How do you engage them?
Yeah. So here in Richmond, our school is Lucille Brown Middle School.
All right.
And it's not just the International Baccalaureate component. It's all sixth graders.
All sixth graders. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Now, all sixth graders get to go on the field trip to Dutch Gap. Last year we lectured to all of the sixth graders, and I think this year we just got to the IB kids. It really just depends on how much time we have and how they can fit this into a very busy schedule in the public school system. So I go in and give a lecture on the wood thrush itself, how to identify it by sight and by sound, what the conservation issues are related to it, such as we discussed earlier, and then take them on a field trip. And then hook them up online on a private network that helps them share pictures and videos and information.
So I'm curious about the online network that you've set up. So they sign up as their own. Is it kind of like a Facebook page or something like that?
It is. It's in a software called Ning, and you have to be invited in because we wanted the families to feel comfortable. Not every family would want their student on Facebook. We realize that. Mm-hmm. So I invite the students in.
So it's a private group.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then they get to share information along with professionals. We have several professionals on that site, too, who engage with the kids and the students.
So how long does that go on? Is it you said you go in the winter and then in the spring? So are you with them throughout that period?
Yes. So I'm with them about 2 to 3 times a year between January and June.
And this is tied into their, I'm assuming since the public schools are inviting you in, that must be tied to their SOL somehow.
Yes. When I market this program to principals and teachers, I show them how. That it is, I couldn't do it any other way because students are so geared towards SOLs in the public schools. You have to show them how this fits into their standards of
learning.
What
are some of the points of learning where this does interact with what they're supposed to be testing on?
Well, that is a very detailed question, and I don't normally hold those details in my head. There are specific SOLs that this does fit into, such as, I don't even know the number system, 5.3A, let's say.
Right.
And that would be with environmental science.
Well, I'm sure it's really helpful for the students to have some opportunity to apply abstract concepts to something tangible.
They love it.
They can learn about environmental sciences from a textbook, but it's so different when you can actually see an individual bird or get outside.
They absolutely
and
love
see
it.
How it's playing out in nature.
It's fun to watch them learn and to, it's so, it feeds me so much to see them get so excited. I teach them about 11 different bird songs in the lecture, and then we play a quiz.
Oh, fun.
And they love that because then we have to say, well, what did that bird sound like to you? So they can remember it. Tell me what it sounded like to you. So we use mnemonic devices
What's a mnemonic device for what the wood thrush sounds like?
Well, I've heard it explained as a yodel. The students at Lucille Brown decided it was a yodel because it's a complex song that has an EOLA component to it.
Interesting. Okay. I won't make you try it
now. It's not like card talk. But it feels like that in the classroom sometimes because I say, well, what did that sound like to you? Use words. And they absolutely love it. And then they learn by sight, too.
That's great. Yeah. Now, if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Mary Elfner today on Inspire Indeed. Mary's the director of Virginia Audubon Council, and she's talking about what Virginia Audubon Council provides to the community and how it's engaging young people in becoming aware of their environment and getting them engaged on helping as stewards of the environment in the future. Now, do you have any specific success stories or specific aha moments that you witnessed with the students that you could share?
I do. The one favorite story is there's a student at Lucille Brown, and she was definitely a star student. And she told us later on this private social network, after she had the lecture, after she had the field trip and got hooked up online, that she was she had heard a wood thrush while walking her dog in Forest Hill Park. So I went down and confirmed the sightings, the audio sightings, and we now know they're in Forest Hill Park, back off where Reedy Creek, uh-huh. It's more Reedy, where the wood thrush would be, because they're very secretive and they like more vegetation. And so this year, we are going to do a Conservation Action Day with Lucille Brown students, and we're going to actually have them planting native plants that are burying plants that the birds will eat before they leave for migration in August. So these particular plants will bury in the summer. The birds will be able to fuel up for migration, and it increases their chances of successfully completing migration because they're well fueled.
Wow, awesome. And then, so the students are going to be getting, you're helping to organize the students to come down to Reedy Creek or the area around Forest Park to do the planting?
At Forest Hill Park, uh-huh. Yes. We've ordered the plants, we're uh-huh. ready to go, and it's going to be in early May, so it's perfect timing.
Great, good time to be out there planting. So
Watering over the summer, too.
Well, yeah, that's definitely an important point, especially around here. We'll see how hot it gets this summer.
Yeah.
So the students, they must be looking forward to this opportunity, too.
Oh, they love it. Yeah. It's so engaging with them. I wish we could reach out to more. I mean, we're limited, of course, like everyone, by mm-hmm. funding and time, but I'd love to see this program grow to reach out to more kids, because I found that they're really learning, mm-hmm. and they're really loving it. Yeah, we're in the era of measurable results, right?
Mm-hmm.
And grantors want to know, are you having a result? Are you really making an effect? With the environment, a lot of times you have to wait a little while longer mm-hmm. than a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And I am convinced, though, that we are creating future conservationists with this program.
Yeah, that's exciting. Well, how do you measure success in the short term? You know, how do you know you're doing a good job?
We do pre- and post-testing mm-hmm. with the kids to make sure they've learned. And we share our success stories widely. And doing things like this with outreach is really helpful to show that we are having an impact. But also just collecting anecdotes from the kids. Very helpful.
I'm sure they tell a great story. I mean, they're the ones that are immediately impacted by it. They probably have the best stories to tell.
They do. They're so wonderful.
You mentioned earlier that you work to engage the whole family as well. How mm-hmm. do you engage the parents and other family members in the work?
Parents can come on the field trip. If they can swing it, they mm-hmm. can come.
Mm-hmm.
And then I try to keep communicating with them to go back out into the field as a family in this, you know, it's hard to do, overscheduled technological age, but mm-hmm. just go back out. Take your kids to a local park, spend a few hours, listen to what you're hearing. You know, if I can encourage people who are listening to this to go out and take a young person out and go to Bryan Park or Bird Park or any of the James River Park places, then I think we've had a success.
I think you mentioned something interesting, too, when you say, and just listen, because it's not just what we see, but it's what we can hear. So you said the wood thrush is secretive, so we may not see them, but maybe we can hear them?
Absolutely. They are, what day is it today? It is early to mid-April.
Uh-huh.
They will arrive anytime. I have not heard one yet this year, but I'm certainly hearing a lot of other spring migrants, mm-hmm. all kinds of warblers and tanagers mm-hmm. now. So it's mm-hmm. coming. They're coming.
Okay, so we'll keep our ears open. And where would we hear, example, bird calls? Where could we, is there a site, does Audubon have a site with
Audubon,
those bird calls?
Yes, and Cornell University, they have a great collaboration. If you just search for bird call ID, bird song ID, I bet you'll come up with the top hit being the Audubon-Cornell collaboration.
Audubon-Cornell collaboration.
I think it's called All About Birds.
Hey.
Yeah, I thought about that.
Well, I'll have to go check it out. I'm really intrigued now.
I always go and use it.
I bet there's an app, too. I bet you could download something on your iPhone.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I have one right here. I mean, we could hear the song. If we had the time for me to pull up the wood thrush, I could probably play it so people could hear it.
Oh, sure. That would be fun.
Okay, let's keep talking, and I'll see how far I can get with that. So I've got my Audubon Birds app up on my phone right now, and I downloaded it from Audubon's National Audubon's website. And here is a song.
Is that the wood thrush?
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, that sounds familiar.
You may have heard them before and not even known what you were hearing.
Right,
so these
right.
apps are great, and thank you for mentioning them, because I use this app all the time when I'm teaching people. I'm in the field, and actually I get to record from my phone now what I'm hearing.
Oh, and then
and
you
identify
can go back
I mean,
and check it later if you weren't sure.
Smartphones are amazing, aren't
they?
Yeah,
helpful to have those tools.
Very helpful. Yeah. So there you go. There was that wood thrush song that you just heard.
Now, what are some other birds that we might see this time of year that we wouldn't see other times of year?
I just yesterday was biking and heard something that didn't sound familiar, and I had heard it before, but it was a palm warbler, and it's a small neotropical migrant warbler that may not stay here and breed, but it's passing through mm-hmm. from its winter home to its summer home. And it was just in a pine tree right by the Union Theological Seminary.
Up on North Side, you just kind of...
Big canopy on North Side. Of course, that's my neighborhood.
Sure,
so.
And a lot of big old trees up there.
Yeah. So we get quite a few migrants passing through North Side, the whole city, though. It's a wooded city. They've got the James River, good tree canopy. And here's a good plug for urban tree canopies right now. I mean, take care of your trees and the medians and in your yards, because they do provide a lot of habitat and food.
That's a good point to make. What are some other ways that individuals can be aware of how they are impacting bird habitat just with their day-to-day lives in the city?
Yes, probably the top things that people can do are to plant native species. If you're thinking of landscaping, figure out some good native plants to work with. Wax myrtle is a great one. It provides berries. It's native. It's easy to take care of. It's not real showy, but it does get berries. Oak trees are great. They provide a lot of food because they have, in the spring, the reproductive organs that,
the
worms come to. You know, remember last year when we had that invasion?
Oh, those inchworms. They were everywhere.
Yeah, that was good food source for the birds.
I bet it was.
Even though we drove us crazy, the birds were really reaping the benefits.
They had a good year. Good. So planting native species, taking care of your trees.
That's the most direct thing I can think of. And certainly having an impact in your local community to make sure that places are protected.
That's a good message.
You know, the James River Park System is a real jewel for Richmond. And so you can join a friends group. You could become a friend of Bryan Park. You could become a friend of the James River Park System.
What about, I hear from time to time that cats have an impact on bird populations. Is that true or is that
it's true.
Urban myth? It is true.
It's true. It is, yes. True. I really dislike this issue, though, because it's such a dichotomy.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And it's, people are so passionate on both sides that this is one of those you can't win discussions. But I'll put on my bird conservation hat and I will say that it has been proven by researchers that domestic and feral cats, which are a growing problem, do take millions to billions of birds every year. It's been studied. It's been proven. And so I have a cat. He stays inside, particularly during the breeding season.
And now is the breeding season, springtime, summer?
Yes. They're establishing territories now and laying their eggs. And it will last through midsummer.
Okay.
But really,
now is a sensitive time.
Keep your cats indoors if at all possible, and go ahead and work with feral cats in terms of, spay and neuter issues.
Right.
And
there are some good groups that are working on the trap neuter release programs. And I know the Richmond SPCA and Henrico Humane Society, they both provide residents with access to traps and then.
Yes.
Free and reduced cost spay neuter programs,
right.
So you can help out in your neighborhood where you see a population started.
Yes. Yeah. And people will say, well, if you feed them, they won't hunt. That's just not true. They have an instinct to hunt and they will.
But I understand it can be a divisive issue because, yes, people love their kitties.
That's one of the most divisive issues in the bird conservation world.
If that's the most divisive, that's not so bad.
There are other things that are more divisive for sure.
What about? I'm sure there are other issues that just go along with environmental conservation in general, and that's a divisive area as well. When you think about our dependence on natural resources in terms of mineral extraction and oil and gas mining and those things, I'm sure that is important to Audubon as well.
Very. Yes, very important to keep these things in mind. And so I come back and say, be aware of how you use energy. Take a bike trip if you at all can instead of driving your car, and turn the heat down or up or the AC down. I mean, really, those are the things we can do to address the issues that you just brought up that do impact our environment.
Yeah. And then impacts maybe our birds, as some of those early indicator species are canaries in the coal mine.
Exactly.
So the birds are going to feel it earlier than some other species or some other parts of our ecosystem. But part of what Virginia Audubon Council is working to do is ensure that that impact is minimized and that we support that habitat that is necessary for them to maintain healthy populations and potentially regain some of the population that's been lost over time.
Exactly. That's true.
Is there anything else that you would like to share before we end today? We have just a few minutes left.
I would say my parting thought is take a child out into nature. Everyone listening, just take a child out. Get them away from the computer, the television. Take them outside. It's beautiful right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Now is a good time of year. That's for sure. So I think I'll take you up on that. I'm ready to go outside.
Let's do it.
If not with a child, at least with myself.
Okay. So. Sounds good.
Thank you, Mary. I've been speaking with Mary Elfner today. She's the director of Virginia Audubon Council. And you've been listening to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us. Mary, thanks again for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Now, before signing off, I would like to share my thanks for WRIR's dedicated volunteers, people like Andrew Hawes and Jay Westerman, who work hard on engineering this show, as well as others. And there are people like Jesse Johnson, who is regularly dedicated to working that soundboard here on Tuesdays. If you want to learn how you can join our team, you can go to WRIR.org. Your donations of time and treasure are always welcome, and we need your support to keep this local voice on the airwaves and continue to hear about the inspiring work of groups like Virginia Audubon Council. You can also visit the Inspire Indeed blog to hear previous shows. That's at inspireindeed.blogspot.com, and see some resources from community organizations we've featured in the past. My name is Elaine Summerfield, and you've been listening to Inspire Indeed, a show that focuses on community issues through the lens of nonprofits. I hope you learned something new on the show today and are ready to go out and make a difference with your deeds and maybe get out and enjoy some sunshine and some birdsong too.